All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So this week's Parsha Shlach. So remember, again, it goes without saying that the cornerstone of Parsha Shlach, and I say cornerstone meaning perhaps the most riveting event in the entire Parsha, although there are many different events, is the episode of Meraglim, the episodes of the spies. So the Torah relates in number one, the beginning of Parak Yud Gimel, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Leimar. Hashem said to Moshe the following, Shlach lecha anoshim v'yasuru es eretz Kanaan asher ani nosein livnei Yisrael, ish echad l'mathe aval savti shlachu kol nesi bohem. So remember again, there's an interesting discussion in general because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Shlach lecha, which on one hand, again, since God is saying Shlach, so it sounds like it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's God who's commanding the sending of the spies. Yet, on the other hand, God uses the word Lecha for you, meaning if this is something you feel you need, then please, by all means, go forward and do it. But again, from my perspective, I'm telling you the land is good. I'm telling you, ultimately, again, that there's no need for any additional vetting process. In any event, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, if you're going to send spies, send one representative from each tribe. By Shlach Osam Moshem Baparan, Al Pi Hashem, Kulam Anoshim Roshei Bnei Yisrael Hima. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead, Moshe Rabbeinu sends them, Anoshim Roshei Bnei Yisrael. These were great men. This is a very important idea in general, that, you know, when we think about the spies, so we think about, of course, the disastrous consequences of their mission. But at the end of the day, it started out with good intentions. Not only that, these individuals were chosen because of their personal piety and holiness. These were amongst the most important men of Klal Yisrael. And the Torah then goes on to explain the Elish Mosam. These are their names. And the Torah identifies who is the particular representative for each tribe, who is the Miragel, who is the spy. Remember again, this is a reconnaissance mission. And remember, the most important thing to do is you want tribal representation. Because if you don't have complete tribal representation, what could happen? If they come back and they give a report, so this one could say, this tribe wants to go in, or that tribe wants to go in. This way, if there's someone representing all of the tribal interests, the hope is that they get a complete report about the nature of the land. Skip down now to number two. So these are the names of the men that Moshe Rabbeinu sent. These are the names of the Meraglim. Vayikra Moshe Lahoshea Binun Yehoshua. And the Torah inserts over here a very intriguing piece of information. That Moshe Rabbeinu decides to change Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. Now remember again, Yehoshua himself is one of the spies. Remember, Yehoshua is the spy. You know, the spy is not really the right word. It's really scouts. He was one of the scouts. He was the scout for the tribe of Ephraim. So the Torah now tells us, before Moshe Rabbeinu sends them out, he seems to call Yehoshua to the side and says, up until now, you've been known as Hoshea. From here on in, you're going to be known as Yehoshua. Which leads to the obvious question of, why did Moshe Rabbeinu feel compelled to change Yehoshua's name, or to change Hoshea's name? And if he felt compelled to change Hoshea's name to Yehoshua, why now? So it's a two-pronged question. Number one, why the name change? Number two, why now, right before Hoshea/Yehoshua is dispatched on this mission? So I want to share with you a number of different approaches. If we take a look at number three, the Chizkuni gives a dramatic approach. The Chizkuni writes, V'yish mefarshim, shino shmo, Moshe changed Yehoshua's name. Do you know why? Al shehutzrach lios min ha-maraglim, v'la'avor derech amalek b'shem Hoshea. So the Chizkuni says something amazing. One of the nations that the maraglim, that the spies would encounter in the land of Canaan, was the nation of Amalek. Now remember again, this was not going to be the first encounter with Amalek. We met Amalek when? Already when we first left Egypt. Remember again, it was Amalek with whom we had our first encounter when we went ahead and we left Egypt. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu himself does not go out to fight against Amalek. Who does he send to fight against Amalek? Yehoshua. So the Chizkuni says something amazing. The Chizkuni says that Moshe Rabbeinu changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua to protect his identity. Moshe was concerned that when the Meraglim went into the land, if the other spies were calling Yehoshua Hoshea, people might hear Hoshea. That name sounds very familiar, because you have to imagine that Yehoshua became quite famous, or Hoshea became quite famous as a result of the war with Amalek. Remember again, this was an astounding victory. The Jewish people had just left Egypt. We were not a warrior nation by any stretch of the imagination. Yet, we defeated one of the most powerful regional nations. nations. The name Hoshea was known far and wide as a gallant, as a fierce warrior. Moshe's concerned that if Hoshea goes into Canaan and he's known by his fellow spies by the name Hoshea, word's going to get out that Hoshea's in town. People know Hoshea, if not by face, certainly by reputation. Therefore, Moshe, in order to, on one hand, protect Yehoshua, and on the other hand, to obscure his identity, changes his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua. Interesting idea. Approach number two. Take a look at number four, the Kli Yakar. So the Kli Yakar writes, again, and these are all, I'm starting off, there are certain answers that are more well-known. I'm starting off with the more obscure answers. So the Kli Yakar number four, which is the second approach for tonight, says something amazing as well. He says, V'yesh Omrin, there's another reason why Moshe changes Yehoshua's name. Lefi Shahaya Meshevet Yosef, Shehevi Dibas Echav, Shibi Dibas Echav. So the Kli Yakar says something which I think is absolutely amazing. Remember again, Hoshea is the spy for which tribe? For the tribe of Ephraim. Now remember again, we know that Ephraim and Manasseh are the one tribe that become two. Remember again, there's no tribe known as Yosef. That's because the bracha that Yosef received, Yosef was a Bechor, he was a firstborn, specifically the firstborn of Rachel Imenu, and therefore as the firstborn, he gets Pishnayim. He gets a double portion. His double portion manifests itself in the fact that his two sons each become their own tribe. So instead of there being one tribe of Yosef, there are two tribes under the umbrella of Yosef, Manasseh and Ephraim. So Hoshea is the meragel, is the spy, is the scout for the tribe of Ephraim. Says the Kli Yakar, Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned. What is he concerned about? He's concerned about the fact that, you know, if we take a step, well, let's read the words. The Fishai Meshevet Yosef, since Hoshea is from the tribe of Yosef, Shehevi Dibas Echav. What is it? Shehevi Dibas Echad? Echav. Yosef, remember again, if we go back to Bereshis, delivered a negative report about his brothers. So remember again, we don't see this explicit in the text, but Rashi quotes the Medrash that says that Yosef came back to his father and reported negatively about his brothers. He said that his brothers were eating Avram and Achai, were eating meat that was not properly shechted. They were just lopping off limbs of an animal and eating it. Now, of course, he was mistaken. Well, what did he see? See, what Yosef saw is that the Shvatim were eating meat, and the meat, without getting too graphic over here, the animal was still trembling. So, you know, even after you shecht an animal, there are involuntary reflexes of the animal that cause the animal. That's why, again, technically speaking, you could cut off the head of a chicken, and the chicken could still run around. So that's involuntary reflexes. The animal's dead. The animal's absolutely dead, but they're involuntary. So what happens? He sees the involuntary reflexes of the animal, and he reports back to his father, "Dad, I have bad news. My brothers are eating Avram and Achai. They're eating limbs from live animals." The Medrash goes on to say, he saw them conducting business with some of the Canaanite women, and he drew conclusions from that they were engaging in immoral conduct. The fundamental flaw of Yosef is that Yosef, as a boy, as a nar, as a young boy, he jumped to certain conclusions based on what he saw at first glance, without taking a deeper look. This perhaps is one of the greatest challenges in life in general. It happens to all of us, where we draw conclusions by a quick cursory glance, and we're so profoundly mistaken. You know, there's the famous idea that Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh brings down. He says that, you know, the hadassim are supposed to represent the eyes. So the halacha is that by the hadassim, they have to be mishulash. You need three of them. You need three of them, and you need three buds on each level. So the Baal Shem Tov says it's an incredible musr in life. The musr in life is, in life, you often have to look at things not once, not twice, but three times in order to gain real perspective. Because more often than not, things are not what they seem. And if you draw your conclusions based on a cursory glance, you often arrive at mistaken and erroneous perceptions. So says the Kli Yakar something amazing. See, one thing is very clear in this whole story. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we will see, was not blind to the possible negative outcome of the miraglim. But you know what the problem, of course, is? You know, we go through this with our children all the time. So if your children want to do something and you tell them no, So what happens? That desire to want to do it becomes even stronger, right? The forbidden fruit is always sweeter. And sometimes, again, my kids think I'm hiding something from them. So sometimes as parents, in certain areas, you have to let your kids kind of figure things out on their own, even though you know it's a total exercise in futility. Moshe Rabbeinu understands over here that, look, Klal Yisrael wants to send in miraculum. So let's play this out. If Moshe Rabbeinu says no, then what conclusion will they arrive at? Something's wrong with the land, right? Why are you hiding it, right? What do you have to hide if it's so wonderful? Let us go in, let us examine it, let us see it, and we'll arrive at our own conclusions. If you don't want us to go in, it must be because you're hiding something. But Moshe Rabbeinu also understands that this is a real roll of the dice. Because, you know, if it's cloudy, or if it's rainy, or if somebody's not nice on the supermarket line, so what's going to happen? The Miraculim are going to draw all of their own conclusions about the nature of Klal Yisrael, about the nature of Eretz Yisrael. Who is Moshe Rabbeinu most concerned about? It's amazing. Who is he most concerned about? He's concerned about the Einik Lach of Yosef. Amazing. He's most concerned about the great-great-great-great-grandchildren of Yosef. Why? Because Yosef, unfortunately, drew conclusions based on erroneous perceptions. So now, right before the Miraculum are about to be sent in, Moshe Rabbeinu pulls aside Hosea, and he says, Hosea, listen, it's not easy for me to have this conversation. You come from wonderful Yichos, but there's only one thing, which is your Zayda drew certain conclusions based on things he thought he saw, but were not in fact the truth. Shelo yelech b'derech zekano. Kimitam ze lo hiske b'olamate Yosef u'begadi ben susi hiske b'olamate Yosef. So therefore, the Kliyakar says something amazing. The Kliyakar says that Moshe pulls Hosea to the side and he says, listen, I don't want you to follow in the path of your grandfather. Can you imagine this? Yosef was a wonderful, great tzaddik. Great tzaddik. And I want to be clear. This mistake that he made about coming to conclusions too quickly was something that occurred in his youth, which this is often the hallmark of youth, right? I think I know everything. Remember, the older we get, the less we actually realize we know, or the more we realize we don't know. Right? When I'm young, I think we know everything. As we get older, we realize we don't know everything. So I want to be clear. All the Kliyakar is saying over here is that Moshe Rabbeinu knows how south this whole thing could go so quickly. He's trying to leverage the risk of the Miraglin mission. And the person he feels, it's amazing by the irony of ironies, is who does he feel is the weakest link in the bunch? It's Yoshua. Isn't that amazing? Not because of Hosea's personal qualities. Remember again, Hosea was Moshe Rabbeinu's most devoted Talmud, most devoted disciple. But he feels that he is the Achilles heel in this Miraglim unit, not because of him, but perhaps a little bit because of his familial DNA. Yosef ran to conclusions based on things that he saw at a cursory glance. Hosea, come here, before you go out, I'm going to change your name. I'm going to change him and add you the extra siyat, the extra divine providence, because I don't want you to repeat the mistakes of your grandfather. An incredible, incredible insight. Take a look at number five. A third approach. Now again, I want to point out, none of these approaches are mutually exclusive. They all work very beautifully in concert together. Number five. So writes the Svarno. A third approach now for tonight. So the Svarno writes, he says the following. Vayikra Moshe Hosea ben Yoshua, Amar, Shahayanoda Bishvato Liishchayo, B'Shem Hosea, Vezesh Nikra Lamala Yoshua, Mipne Shemoshe Rabinu Karolokach, Lechavod Ulispalov, Sheyi Yanosha, Vishayoshia Achirim. So this is interesting. So according to the Svarno, what's unfolding over here is the following. So let's actually read that once more. Amar Shayanoda Bishvato Lishchayel B'Shem Hosea. So remember, prior to this episode, so Hosea is known in his tribe as Hosea, known as a great man, a valiant warrior. V'zesh Shenikra L'Mala Yoshua Mipnei Shemosh Rabinu Kar Lokach L'Kavot U'Lehispalel Halov Shiyi Enosha V'Sheyoshia Achirim. So according to the Svarno, and now you're going to see the exact opposite of the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar in the second approach, in source number 4, remember again, why, according to the Kliyakar, why does Moshe Rabbeinu change Hosea's name to Yoshua? Why? Right? Because he's scared for him. Meaning, again, remember, according to the Kliyakar, Moshe Rabbeinu's perception is that Hosea is the weakest link. Again, not because of him, but because a little bit of some familial history. He feels Hosea's the weakest link. He adds the Yud to Hosea's name to bolster Hosea. The Sfarno says just the opposite. The Sfarno says that Moshe Rabbeinu has the greatest confidence in Yahushua. The greatest confidence in Hosea. So why does he add the extra yud? Look at the last line, number 5. Mipnesha Moshe Rabbeinu Karlo Kach. Why does he call Hosea Yahushua? L'chavod. It was a sign of kavod. U'lehispalel alav. To go ahead and daven for him. Sheyihye nosha. He should be saved from every difficult situation. V'sheyoshia achirim. And he should have the strength to go ahead and save others. So in other words, according to the Sfarno, the name Yehoshua is literally translates as what? Yehoshua is one who provides salvation. In the root is also one who receives salvation. So it's a two-pronged tefillah. Number one, Yehoshua. Ultimately, again, if you get into difficult situations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you the koach to extricate yourself. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should also give you the koach, give you the power, give you the strength and resolve to save others. So in other words, according to the Sfarno, Moshe Rabbeinu, remember the underlying theme is that Moshe Rabbeinu has incredible anxiety over this process. Because again, remember, at the end of the day, nothing good is going to come from the Meraglim. The most that could happen is it could be neutral, it could be parith, but nothing good is going to come from it. The reason nothing good comes from it is why? Right, because first of all, again, it's rooted, the entire mission is rooted, if you drill down to the core, in a doubt regarding the word of God. Meaning, if you trust God, and God tells you the land is good, and God tells you to go in, there's no need for miraculum. Now, you could say, we want strategy, we want this, that's all fine, but at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you it's good, then by definition, there's no need. Yes?
I wasn't learned out that B'nai Israel requested miraculum, because it says,
in Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells over the narrative, so Moshe Rabbeinu indicates that you asked me for miraglim. So in Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the whole story. So remember, this is very important. The backdrop is very important. So Moshe Rabbeinu understands something bad is going to go down. Hopefully, it's just not going to be catastrophic, but certainly something's going to go wrong because nothing good ever comes out from second-guessing the Word of God. This, by the way, you understand, this is one of the underlying themes or one of the underlying messages in the story of the Meraglim in general is essentially, don't be smarter than God. We have multiple stories in Tanakh of people who try to be smarter than God, and it never ends well. The Meraglim is one of the most catastrophic manifestations of this. Where else do we see it? We see most notably with Shaul, right? Shaul was given the command to go ahead and wipe out Amalek. And what happens? He gets to the city, he's about to do it, and what happens? He's the Rachamon, right? Suddenly he's the king of compassion. He says, I can't wipe out the women and children, I can't do this. Don't second guess God. This, by the way, in general, you should know, this is not a topic for tonight, but I think that this is one of the greatest challenges of our generation, because there are many movements, I'm talking about even just within Orthodoxy itself, that try to go ahead and quote-unquote be more compassionate or be more loving, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's nothing more compassionate than Kadosh Baruch Hu, and there's nothing more loving than Halacha. Halacha itself, by definition, reflects the ethos of the Ribono Shel Olam. And we always have to be careful whenever we think that we are more compassionate, more loving, or more accepting than God or than Chazal. It only gets us into trouble when things like this happen. And the paradigmatic example of this is the Meraglim. In any event, back to this. So Moshe Rabbeinu understands that something is going to go wrong, or there's a potential something to go wrong. So according to the Sfarno, Moshe Rabbeinu feels that who's his guy on the ground? Who's his guy on the ground? It's Hosea. So he pulls Hosea to the side, and essentially he says, listen, Hosea, I'm calling you Yehoshua. Why? Because I believe that you have the ability, if this goes bad, you have the ability to turn it around. If this goes bad, then again, Hosea, you become Yehoshua, the extra yud, the extra spiritual energy, extra spiritual strength, you can help marshal everyone else and get everyone else redirected in the proper direction. Now it's interesting. Rabbeinu Bechaya number 6 points out of it. The im kein yesh lishol mipnei man niskar b'Torah b'shem Yehoshua kampam kol mashlichos hazeh. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says, well, here's what's interesting. The common denominator among all of the opinions we've seen before is that the actual name change is happening here. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, if the actual name change is happening here, we are left with a fundamental question, which is, Hoshea is referred to as Yehoshua many times before this episode. But if Hoshea's name is being changed here, then why is he referred to as Yehoshua earlier on in the Torah? To which Rabbeinu Bechaya says, Hushekasov, Umesharso Yehoshua ben Nun, Uksiva Yakamosha Yehoshua Mesharso, Vechein, Vayan Yehoshua ben Nun, Mishares Moshe. So Rabbeinu Bechaya asks a very interesting question. If everyone's agreeing that Yehoshua's name is actually being changed here, why is he referred to as Yehoshua earlier on in the Chumash as well? So to which the Chizkuni says, number 7, Vayikra Moshe Loshe ben Yehoshua, Loshe Kara after Yehoshua. So the Chizkuni now says, we're going to bring this all together. The Chizkuni says, you're right. The name change is not happening here. The Torah is giving you a piece of information, but it is not a chronological piece of information. It's a, for lack of a better term, informational piece of information. Torah is telling me that Moshe changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. Does it mean that Moshe did it now? The Chizkuni says no. Lo shekara ato Yehoshua. Doesn't mean he changed his name now. Elakach haperush. Hu shekaro Moshe Yehoshua kivar kishenase misharso umatzachin be'inov. So says the Chizkuni, Moshe Rabbeinu changed Hoshea's name a long time ago. When the Talmud Rebbe Bond, when the teacher-student Bond first began to become forged, ultimately, Moshe sees incredible qualities within this young man, and he changes Hoshea's name, reflecting a renewed sense of confidence in Hoshea. Therefore, he says, "Umatzachin be'enof." Hoshea found great favor in Moshe's eyes. Shekenu aminog, sheken matzinu ba'Avraham v'sarav Yaakov, Daniel, Hanani, Mishava, Azaria, Sidkia, Shekvar Shmo, Masanyo, Nechemish, Karai, Hatir Shasa. The Chizkuni says something amazing. When God has renewed confidence in someone to accomplish something great, how does that divine confidence often manifest itself? Through a name change. Avram becomes Avraham, Sarai becomes Sarah, Yaakov becomes Yisrael, so on and so forth. Therefore, the Chizkuni posits that in reality, Hoshea's name was not changed here. What's happening over here is the Torah is choosing to inform us here. Now, but we'll get to why Torah is informing us here. But according to, again, the Sfar of the Rabbeinu Bechaya Chizkuni, what's happening over here is the following. Moshe Rabbeinu changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua long ago. When I say long ago, what is it? A year before. When Yehoshua first attached himself as Moshe Rabbeinu's Talmid, as Moshe Rabbeinu's student, that's when Moshe changes Hoshea's name to Yehoshua, reflecting a newfound sense of confidence. Hoshea, I believe in you. What was the confidence? That's number 5, the Sfarno. So the confidence was, Hoshea, I believe that you have the ability to turn things around. I believe you have the ability, the resolve, to stand strong no matter what happens. And I believe that you have the ability to turn others around as well. In other words, if others are not doing the right thing, you have the ability to be an incredibly profound and positive influence on others and to help redirect the negative kochos, the negative traits, and the negative energies of others into a positive direction. So it's happening over here. So therefore, why is it being mentioned here? It's being mentioned here because, again, Moshe Rabbeinu understands the potential negative fallout from this particular episode. He understands at the end of the day there's the propensity for much harm or for much damage. So it's almost like he's not changing Yehoshua's name, but rather what is he doing? He's reminding Hoshea of his name change. He's reminding Hoshea, Hoshea, you're no longer Hoshea. You are Yehoshua. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. You could stand up for what is right. And if you see others making negative mistakes or negative choices, you have the ability to help them redirect themselves. The name change happened long ago, but it's almost like final words of Chizuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Hoshea before dispatching him on the message, on the mission. Before you go out with the Meraglim, let me give you this additional Chizuk, this additional strength. Remember, you are Yehoshua. You have the ability to save yourself from disastrous mistakes and to save others as well. Take a look at number 8, a fourth approach. for the approach. So remember, approach number three is going to be different than the other approaches, because the other approaches up until now have the name change happening actually now. However, again, in approach number three, the Sfarno, the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Cheskuni, the name change occurred earlier. Take a look at number eight. The fourth approach, the MS Liakar of Yaakov Kamenetsky. So the Yaakov Kamenetsky is fine. He says, Perish Vizal, Perish Rashi Vizal, Nispalo Alov. So remember, here, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zeh Tzadok Levracha, quotes the Rashi. So what we'll discuss this Rashi in greater depth in just a moment. And Rashi says, why the extra Yod? Bless you. Nispalo Alov, because Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Yoshua, Ka Yoshiacha Mi'atzas Miraglim. God should save you from the council of the spies. He says, "Kvari idu amefarshim." So we're gonna explore this a little bit more in just a moment. But according to this Rashi, according to this approach, Moshe Rabbeinu senses that something is gonna go disastrously wrong, and therefore he says to Yoshua, "Ultimately, God should save you from the negative, from the evil counsel of the sages." Ukvar heiru hamefarshim, madua lo hispalo Moshe gamal kalev shol yechet abatzis meraglim. So the mefarshim ask, "Well, Moshe, why are you only davening? Why are you only davening for Hoshea? Why aren't you also davening for Kalev? Or for that matter, why aren't you davening for everyone? Why just Yoshua?" The Efsha Shesavar Moshe, listen to this. The Efsha Shesavar Moshe, Shekalev Shehaya Nasui Li'isha Tzadekes, Kimo Miriam Hanavia, Betach Lo Yitvas Ve'atzas Meraglim, Ve'eno Zakok Livracha. He says something amazing. He says, you know what the chilik was? Yoshua was single. Kalev was married. But Kalev wasn't just married. Kalev was married to Miriam. So Moshe Rabbeinu has no doubt that at the end of the day, Kalev's going to be just fine. Why is Kalev going to be just fine? Because you better believe that before he left the house, Miriam told him what the report's going to be already, right? That's a good wife. She tells you what you're going to see even before you see it. And she tells you what your report's going to be even before you have the ability to experience it yourself. But on a serious level, meaning what happens with the meraglim essentially is just immature, irrational behavior that descends into paranoia. So Moshe Rabbeinu understood that the power of a good wife is that she keeps you grounded in reality. He's not worried ultimately again about Kalev, because Kalev has a good wife. Kalev is married to Miriam. She'll keep him rooted in reality. In other words, when he comes back and he talks with her a little bit, even if he's a bit disillusioned with what he saw, she will be able to give him the proper hadracha, the proper guidance, which ultimately will give him the proper perspective. But Yoshua wasn't married. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned that he may be swayed ultimately again by the other meraglim, ultimately by the other spies. So now, let's take a moment, because we'll spend the remainder of our time on the last approach, but let's just review so far what we have. So far we have four different approaches in trying to understand Moshe Rabbeinu's name change Moshe Rabbeinu's changing of Hoshea's name from Hoshea to Yoshua. So approach number one, the Chizkuni. Ultimately, again, Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned because they're going into Amalekite territory. The Amalekim know Hoshea. In order to protect Hoshea, he changes Hoshea's name to Yoshua. Kli Yakar. Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned that Hoshea is the weak link. Why is he the weak link? Why? Because he's the enikel of Yosef. Yosef's one weak link in his youth was rushed to judgment based on a cursory glance at the circumstances. Therefore, it says, Hoshea, listen, you have to be careful. This is in your familial DNA. You need to be careful. Therefore, adds on the Yod, ultimately, to give him chizuk in his mission. Smart approach, the third approach, the polar opposite. First of all, number one, Moshe already changed Hoshea's name. Not here, but earlier on. Why did he change Hoshea's name? This same way that we often find name changes in the evolution of the personalities of great people. You know, Yitzchak Berdichev has this beautiful insight. He says that, you know, your name, he actually quotes his rather, says, when a person's name, the osios, the letters of one's name, are the receptacles for shefa, the receptacles for divine energy. There are some people that are so great that they outgrow their name. This is why, by the way, also, when a person, Nachman Aslan, is very ill, we add on a name. Why do we add on a name? So people think, because you're Mashana the Mazel. There's a much more profound idea, which is, the more letters you have, the more receptacles, the more kelim you have to be able to receive divine energy, divine shefa. So ultimately, again, every single time we see someone graduate a level in greatness, we see a name change. Hoshea becomes Moshe's student. Moshe sees his greatness, and therefore what? Moshe already added on a name or changed his name. He added on the yud long ago. Just before he's sending him out on the mission, he pulls him aside. Remember who you are. You're not Hoshea. You're Yehoshua. You have the ability to save yourself. You have the ability to save others if you see them making negative mistakes. Finally, approach number four, the MS Liakov. He davens, he thinks Hoshea is susceptible. Why? Because he's not married. Because Matzah Isha Matzah Tov, a person has a wife, a person has incredible in-house counsel, literally in-house counsel, without even the retainer or anything else. So Lemaisa again, Hoshea Kalev has it. He therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is not concerned about him. Yehoshua doesn't have it. Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned that he may be swayed by the Meraglim. And this finally leads us to the last approach for tonight. And this will spend the remaining part of our time. So the Gemara Maseches Sota, which Rashi quotes, this is number 9 is quoted in Rashi, but it's originally in Gemara. And this perhaps is the most well-known approach. The Gemara says, Yehoshua, kivar bikesh Moshe Lavrachim. Moshe Rabbeinu already asked for divine compassion for Yehoshua. I mean, he asked for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to intercede on behalf of Yehoshua. Shene'emar, Vayikra Moshe, Lo Shea Binun Yehoshua. So the Gemara understands that the Yud, what does the Yud represent, according to the Gemara? The Yud represents the name of God. So essentially what's happening over here is that Moshe Rabbeinu is adding the name of God to Hoshea's name. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu adding the name of God to Hoshea's name? The message is, Ka Yoshi'acha me'atzas miraglim. God should save you from the council of the spies. Now, according to the Gemara, which is, and this is a very dramatic approach, according to the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu already knows from the beginning that what? That this is going to go badly. It's going to go badly. So the most that Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be hoping for out of this is that at least not everyone will buy in with the spies, and maybe again, there will be a voice of reason from the midst of this group. So therefore, the extra yid representing God, God should save you from the counsel, from the advice of the spies. Take a look at number 10. Turn the page. So it says the Medrash. So Medrash echoes the same basic idea. Lo Shebed and Yehoshua. Melamech Shenispal of Moshe Rabbeinu Vahosif Lo Os Achos. So again, Rashi, the Medrash, the Gemara, all echoing the same idea. Why the Yud? The Yud is the name of God. And ultimately, a Moshe Rabbeinu was davening for is Yehoshua. God should give you additional strength to be able to stay strong and to be able to stand up against the counsel of the spies. Comes along the Yerushalmi in number 11. And says something dramatically different. The Yerushalmi writes, Rabbi Huna, B'shem Rabbi Acha, get ready for this. Yud shenat ala kodesh baruch hu me'imenu sara, ala yud v'nishtatech lifnei kodesh baruch hu. So says the Yerushalmi something amazing. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed Sarai's name to Sarah, the yud that was bumped out of Sarai's name came before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Yud came before God, and the Yud literally prostrated itself before God and said, "Va'amar ribon ha'olamim, akartani minat tzadekes hazos, ribono shel olam, what did you do for me? You took me away from the tzadekes. Here I was a letter in the name of Sarai, I was a letter in the name of the first of the matriarchs, and you bumped me, you bumped me, you dislodged me from the name of Sarai. Amar la kodesh bar, and I'm upset. I'm upset. Yuds have feelings too, right? I'm upset. I had such a beautiful place. I had such a prominent position. I was the bookend of Sarai's name, and now you displaced me. Amar la Kodesh Baruch Hu, don't worry. Tzeilucha l'sha'avar ha'yisa b'self teva. So says Kodesh Baruch Hu to the little Yud, I have good news. See, when you were part of Sarai's name, you were at the end of the name. Chayecha shani nosencha b'rosh teva. I'm going to put you somewhere beautiful. And you're no longer going to be at the end. You're going to be in the beginning. He says, where? D'chsev v'yikra Moshe l'Hoshea b'Nun Yehoshua. So the Yerushalmi says something absolutely dramatic, which is, unlike the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, and unlike the Medrash, and unlike Rashi, who understand that the Yud of Yehoshua is the Yud of the Shem Hashem, the Yud of the name of God, ultimately, again, the Yerushalmi understands that the Yud of Yehoshua is the Yud from Sarai. The Yud from Sarai. Now, you have to understand something. Whenever you see something like this in the Yerushalmi, I mean, you could choose to believe it literally if you would like. You can, but you don't have to. You can also understand that Chazal are expressing a message, meaning what Chazal are trying to express is like this. It can't be haphazard that Sarai Imenu, Sarai loses a Yud, and Hoshea gains. I mean, that can't be accidental. It can't be accidental. Remember, it's not just that, but remember, so ultimately again, Hoshea began with a hay, and then ultimately Sarai goes to Sarai that ends with a hay. This Chazal sense, there's gotta be some type of connection between Sarai and Hoshea. The way that Chazal choose to express that connection is by saying that the Yud of Sarai ultimately is transferred to Hoshea. So Chazal are trying to, so again, like I said, if you want to believe it literally, absolutely. If you don't want, you're still a good Jew if you don't want to believe it literally. And you understand Chazal are expressing a message. And the message is that there is some type of connection between Sarai or Sarai Imenu and Hoshea / Yoshua. What's the connection? Take a look at number 12. So the Aznanter of Siratskin says something quite beautiful. He says, V'tzarachiyun. Lama bachru b'Hoshea benun lahosif lo asayud. So that's an interesting question. So no. So why does Sarai's yud go to Hoshea? Meaning why? That first of all, again, remember, so Yoshua is not the first person to have a yud. Really, if you think about it, the first person to have a yud was who? Was really Yaakov, right? Because Yaakov goes to Yisrael. You know, there's an additional Yud. Yisrael also has a Yud. So you could say it's the same Yud of Yaakov, but I'm saying it's not the first name change that included a Yud. So why does the Kodesh Baruch Hu choose to tell the hurt Yud? Why does Kodesh Baruch Hu try to tell the offended Yud, don't worry, you're going to go to Hoshea? Why Hoshea? So look what he writes. He says, Shigaro Misarai, Vishlomar, Shaide Shashina Shma Misarai Lesara. Nolad lo Yitzchak, says Azayim Torah, because remember, as a result of changing Sarai's name to Sarah, she was privileged to have Yitzchak. Meaning again, Sarai was not destined to have a son with Avram Avinu. Sarah was. Va'adir chafetzayud, sheyirash, excuse me, va'adir chafetzahaya, sheyirash es kol Eretz Yisrael, k'mo she'amar li Avram, ki lo yarash ben ha'amazos im b'ni'im Yitzchak. So ultimately, again, says that something amazing. What did Sarai Imenu want more than anything? So she wanted a son. Right? She wanted a son. Why did she want a son? Why did she want a son? You know, in general, this is an interesting question to ask, meaning, why is it that people want children? Why do we want children? Right? I'm sorry?
Pass on the name.
We can take it even one step further. Rav Hirsch says something amazing. Rav Hirsch says, because deep down, what each of us desire most is immortality. I would love to live forever, but I also know I can't live forever. What's one of the ways in which I go ahead and I secure some level of immortality? Children. It's a passing down of a name on a very real level, but there's also, I know now, that in Meretz Hashem, there's a piece of me that lives on even when I am no longer here. By the way, that's why the loss of a child is such a profound loss. Because the loss of a child, of course, again, it doesn't have to be explained, but remember, again, the loss of a child also compounds the parent's own mortality. Now, again, that which I thought which was going to outlive me, unfortunately, now is not. It's profound on so many different levels. So says the Zayin Torah, so why does Sarai Imenu want a child? Yes, every mother wants a child, but there's more than that. For Sarai Imenu, she realizes that there is a divine promise. What's the divine promise? What's the first promise that Hashem Baruch Hu gives to Avraham Avinu? First promise. Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the first promise. So Sarai Imenu wants to have a son who ultimately, again, is going to have the privilege to inherit the land. Avraham Avinu is not going to inherit the land in his entirety. Who knows who's going to, but maybe her son will. So Sarai Imenu's ultimate desire is, and that's actually the Zayin Torah says, that when Sarah tells Avraham that he has to chase out Yishmael from the home, so she uses the wording, Kilo Yarash es ben ama azos im b'nei Yitzchak. The son of that maidservant will not inherit with my son. Will not inherit what? Will not inherit what? The Zayin Torah posits, won't inherit Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, you hear what Sarai Imenu is saying? Sarai Imenu is saying is, my children will not split the land with Yishmael. Pretty profound statement. My children, Eretz Yisrael is not to be shared. Eretz Yisrael is not to be divided. Eretz Yisrael is not to be sliced up. Eretz Yisrael belongs to the children of Avram Avinu. And Simon says to Avram, amazing idea, I will not share, my son will not share his Yerusha, ultimately again with Yishmael. Sarah Imenu's desire to have a child was profoundly rooted in the idea that she wanted a son to inherit the land. Sarah Imenu's desire for a son was a manifestation of her love for Eretz Yisrael, for Eretz Canaan. Watch this. So remember again, Avram doesn't fully inherit the land. Yitzchak doesn't. Yaakov does it. Who's going to be the one who really inherits the land? It's going to be Yehoshua. Remember, Moshe's not going in. Yehoshua's going to be the one who takes the people into that. He's going to be the one who is the vehicle to allow the people to inherit the land. Therefore, Shuhinchil Esa Eretz the Aris the Yisrael Lufichach Magialo Bitzedek Hayud. So such a magnificent, magnificent insight of the Aznaim LaTorah. So the Yud of Sarai, the Yud that came from that beautifully holy name, of that woman who just wanted a child, why? Because she wanted the offspring, the Abrahamic offspring, to inherit the land. That desire, that wish, was never fulfilled in her lifetime. But it will be fulfilled with Yehoshua. Therefore, there's a little piece of Sari Imenu's identity, a little piece of her yearning, a little piece of her pining that attaches itself to Hosea. That Yud of Sari Imenu, that Yud which represents, it says in the Talmud Torah, her yearning and her desire for a child who would inherit the land, that Yud ultimately is passed on to Hosea to become Yehoshua, ultimately to forge his identity as the one who would bring the people into the land. But the truth is, we could take this connection between Sarah and, or Sarai and Yehoshua one step further. So Sarah Imenu was a magnificent matriarch on so many different levels. Meaning, it's hard to understand. People often focus on the greatness of the Avos, but it's exceptionally important to realize that there are no Avos without Imos. Now, Soloveitchik points this out. He says, we see this because after the death of Sarah Imenu, what does Avram Avinu go on to do? Like, what do we know about Avram Avinu after Sarah died? Right? So we know he bought Ma'aseh Machpelah, and he married off Yitzchak. And it's easy that he remarried in his later years. Meaning, we don't see any dynamic activity. There's like, the Avram Avinu post Sarah's death is not the same Avram Avinu pre Sarah's death. And that's for a very simple reason. There is no Avram without a Sarah. There's no Avram without a Sarah. Just like there was no Yitzchak without a Rivka, and there was really no Yaakov without a Rachel and Leah. Each of the patriarchs were great because of their wives. Kind of going back to what we saw before in the MS Yaakov, Yaakov Kamenetsky. So let's understand the true great meaning. If you have to, Sarah Imenu is there for Sarah Imenu has many facets of greatness. But if you have to kind of localize, if you have to identify what is her core nugget of greatness, what would it be? So take a look at number 13. So the Torah is defined. V'sarai eshes Avram lo yoldalo. So Sarai, the wife of Avram, did not give birth. And what happens? V'lo shivcha mitzvah shma Hagar. She had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. V'tomer Sarai al Avram. So Sarai says to Avram, Hinei no atzarani Hashem iledes. God has prevented me from giving birth. Come to my maidservant. Maybe I'll be built up through her. And ultimately, again, Avram Avinu listened to Sarai. Sarai goes down and takes Hagar, her maidservant, and gives her to Avraham, her husband, Li'isha, as a wife. The Ramban in number 14 says something amazing. The Ramban says, the Ramban says, paragraph Aleph 14, Al Vayishma Avram Lakol Sarai, Lo Omarakos Vayas Kane, Aval Omar Kishama Lakol Sarai, Yirmos, Kiafa Pisha Avram Mis Ave Ma'od Lebanim, Lo Asa Kane Below Rishus Sarai. Even though Avram Avinu wanted very much to have children, he would have never asked Sarai to take another wife. He would have, it's amazing, it tells you about the love and commitment they had to each other. You know, Rav Soloveitchik also points out, but just as an aside, people often think that the only value in marriage is having children. That's not true. There's a value in marriage in the relationship, even if that union, for some reason, does not produce children. And the Rav says the paradigmatic example of that is Avram Avinu and Sarah. The fact that, why doesn't Avram Avinu ever tell Sarai, you know, I need to have children. Meaning, this is not just like there's. I'm supposed to build a dynasty. How do I build a dynasty without kids? Because he understood that Sarai was his partner in life, and it almost appears that Avram Avinu, at the end of the day, if it meant that he was not going to have children, then he just wasn't going to have children. But he never asked for this. He never said anything. This was Sarai Imenu's idea. V'gam ata lo niskavin shi banu hu mehagar v'yezaram meno aval kol kavanasa la'asav shvason Sarai sheti banu mehmeno shi fine. Paragraph B, base. The Omar Od Vatikach, sorry, watch this. Lodia, Shalomir Shalomir Avram Madabra at Shalak Chasai Vinis Vinasna Becheko. Vihiskiakas of Sarai Isha Savram, the Avram Isha. The Rabban points out something very interesting. Over and over in the Pasuk reinforces Sarah, who's Avraham's wife, gives Hagar to Avram, who's Sarah's husband. The Pasuk goes over three or four times, always restating Sarai is Avram's wife, and Avram is Sarai's husband. Why keep on restating that? Lirmos, listen to these words. Paragraph 14, base, second line, middle of the line. Lirmos. Ki Sarah lo nisya shame Avram. Sarah Imenu never gave up hope and did not distance herself from Avram Avinu. She says, "Velo hirchika atzma mi'atzlo." She never distanced him from her, and she never distanced herself from him. Ki hi ishto v'hu isha. She is his wife, and he is her husband. Aval rotisa shetia gam hagar ishto. But so says Rabban, what's happening over here? What's happening? So Rabban says, under the normal course of events, what would normally occur would be that ultimately, again, when Sarai realized that she wasn't having children, she gave Hagar, ultimately, again, to Avram. So what would happen? There would be a natural distance that's created, right? There'd be a distance between Avram and Sarah, or more appropriately, there'd be a distance Sarah and Avram, right? I couldn't fulfill that maternal role. I couldn't give my husband ultimately again what he so desperately desired. By definition, that would create a distance between the couple. Yet Ramban says something amazing happened. Sarah Imenu said, "I know I can't have children, but I'm not going to let that issue come in the way of our marriage and come in the way of the mission." What's the mission? The mission is to build a nation. So Avram, when we first started out, then you heard Lech Lecha, and God told you, you're going to be father of a great nation. So you, Avram, assumed that those children would come from me. And I, Sarah, assumed that those children would come from me. The Ribono Shel Olam has other plans, but it's okay. It's okay. We're going to keep with the mission. The mission is to build the Abrahamic family and dynasty. We thought it was going to happen one way. Apparently, it's going to happen a different way. So you'll marry Hagar. And by the way, the Ramban points out something amazing. The Pasuk says that Sarai gave Hagar to Avram as an Isha, as a wife. You know, in biblical times, there are two different types of marital unions. You could be an Isha, you could be a Pilegesh, a concubine. So on the notes, for example, Bilhah and Zilpah were not full wives. They were concubines. They were Pilegshos. They were second-tier wives. So Avram is ready to take Hagar as a Pilegesh. Sarah says, no, you're not going to take her as a Pilegesh. You're going to marry her. This is going to be a regular marriage. Why? Because the offspring of the Abrahamic family have to come from regular normative marriage. Now, do you understand the pain that must have caused Sarai? Meaning, you know, it's one thing, painful enough that she can't have children. But at least, if she's going to be the primary wife, and Hagar is going to be the secondary, the Pilegesh, at least her position in the household ultimately is solidified. But essentially, what she's saying is she's bringing in Hagar into the household here, on the same level as another wife. Now again, it backfires at the end of the day because they have incredible animosity. But this was her machshava, this was her thought. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Because Sarai says to her husband, it's not about me and it's not about you. It's about the mission. We're part of something bigger than ourselves. And when you're part of something bigger than yourself, sometimes you have to put your own personal stuff in check. Sometimes, again, even though you don't get what you want, you have to keep surging forward to accomplish the mission. Herein lies, I think, the greatness of Sari Imenu. There are many different parts of her personality that are great. But this idea to remain singularly dedicated to a mission, singularly dedicated to an ideal, even when what? The actualization of that ideal or that message is not going the way you had planned, that's the greatness of Sara Imenu. That's the greatness of Sara. So now we understand a little bit better. So what does it mean the Medrash says? That the Yod of Sarai goes ultimately to Hoshea to make him Yehoshua. So perhaps what's unfolding over here is the following. Perhaps what's unfolding is Moshe Rabbeinu, like we saw, has significant concerns about the mission and has significant concerns about how this whole thing is going to play out. So what does he say to Yehoshua? He pulls Hoshea, He pulls Hoshea to the side. He says, Hoshea, I'm giving you a Yud. I'm adding a Yud. And what's Yehoshua's first question? Okay, I thought it was, where are you getting the Yud from? Right? Where are you getting the Yud from? And to which Moshe Rabbeinu responds, oh, this is the Yud of the Alter Baba, right? This is the Yud. This is the Yud of Sarai. I'm giving you the Yud of Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'm giving you the Yud of Sarai. And asks Yehoshua, Rabbi, why are you giving me the Yud of Sarai? To which Moshe Rabbeinu responds, because Yehoshua, I don't know what you're going to see in the land, but I just have a feeling in my kishkas that it's going to be tumultuous. And so you have to keep your eye on the ball. You have to keep your eye on the mission. Don't veer. This is our land. This was promised to Avraham Avinu. This is what we dreamed about. This is what we cried about. This is what we yearned for and pined for. You know, maybe it'll look good. Maybe it won't look good. I don't know, Moshe says. I've never been there. Right? I have no idea what you're going to encounter. I have no idea what challenges you're going to see. But all I can tell you is it's perfect. And it's ours. I can't tell you what it looks like, what you're going to see, what's going to happen. All I can tell you is this is the actualization of our destiny. And so, Shea, you have to exhibit Sarai-like strength. You have to exhibit commitment to the ideal no matter what happens. At the end of the day, the others may be dissuaded by what they see, but I'm giving you the Yud of Sarai. I'm giving you the Yud of the woman who was so singularly dedicated to a mission, to a vision, that even when it didn't work out for her as an individual, and even when her own interests were compromised, she was so dedicated to the ideal, to the mission, that she rose above all of her own individual personal situations and aspects. I'm giving you that koach. No matter what you see, no matter what you observe, you go in with the mindset that this is what has been promised to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, it's perfect. And therefore, it's exactly what we need. And some way, somehow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow it all to work out to us. This is the great Eitzah that Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately was giving to his prized Talmud Toshea. And the truth is, we see, so this is how it fits into Parashat Shlach, but if you think about it, it's an incredible idea. If you look at number 15, so remember again, what do the Meraglim say? What do the Meraglim say when they come back? So, Vayomer Ishalachiv Nitnarosh, Venashuva Mitzrayim. This is actually the Jewish people say this after they hear the disastrous report of the spies. So, what do they essentially say? What do they say? Not essentially. We give up. We give up. Let's go back. We give up. The antithesis of Asarai Imenu, the antithesis of the Yud. The message of the Yud was that in life, when you believe in something, you have to surge forward no matter what. And this was not just the din. This is not just the concept by Yehoshua and Eretz Yisrael. The truth is, for us, it becomes an incredible message in life. You know, how many of us started out life with certain ideas and ideals that we wanted to live by, and then you know what happens? What happens? Right? It becomes a little bit difficult, right? Suddenly, again, those ideas and those ideals kind of become, I realize that they require a lot of sacrifice. And the truth is, they don't actualize in the way that I wanted them to actualize. And very often, we park those ideas and ideals on the shoulder. It's not that they're not important to me. It's just that I'm not really ready and willing to fight for it. And the message of Parsha Shlach, the message of Sarai, the message of the Yud that was so upset, you understand why the Yud doesn't want to leave Sarai, because that's the Yud ultimately, again, of commitment. That's the Yud of a commitment to an ideal, of commitment to a life concept, of commitment to a goal, of commitment to a mission. That Yud doesn't want to leave Sarai. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Yud, don't worry. I'm going to put you with someone else who's going to be just as committed to an ideal and to a mission as well. And that's Yehoshua. And that's like, even though when everyone else around him is saying, it's terrible, the land is horrible, let's go back. Hosea, Yoshua is the one who says, we can do this, because that's the koach of Sarai. That's the koach of Yoshua. That's the koach of the Yod. The message for us is quite profound. The message for us is, in life, it's important to have, you know, we should have our mission. All of us have to have our mission. Bless you. And again, often throughout life, we have multiple missions. And we should have, bless you. We have things that we're aspiring to, things we want to actualize, things we want to do. But sometimes those very things in life that are important to us become exceptionally difficult. And sometimes the pathway to actualizing them becomes absolutely grueling. But we have to learn from Sarai, from the Yod, from Yehoshua, to remain committed to our ideals, to remain committed to our goals, to remain committed to our vision of life, even if it becomes a little bit difficult, to find that incredible koach, to remain committed to the mission, to find that incredible koach to not veer, even if it doesn't actualize the way that I wanted it, or even if my interests are not as well served as I thought they would be, to find that koach to always remain focused on the goal, to find that koach always to remain focused on the mission. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. This is our last shiur for the summer. So, Amirat Hashem will pick up, actually, usually around Rosh Chodesh Av. We'll have a couple of shiurim leading into Tisha B'Av. But you'll stay tuned for the upcoming schedule. Wonderful summer.